I'm Lee Foster. You're listening to Action, the No Bullshit podcast dedicated to the pursuit of acting excellence. This episode is brought to you by Backstage. Become a member and get access to more performing arts jobs than any other platform. To try it for free for 30 days, go to backstage.com/action. Again, that's backstage.com/action. Become a member like me. Michael Kostroff, thanks for coming back.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I love visiting this podcast.
So right off the bat, you have some classes coming up in Chicago. Tell us when those are, what they are, and where they are.
Well, if it's okay with you, I'll tell you about New York and Atlanta also, because you have listeners everywhere.
Please do.
Right. So in order, in New York, I'm doing Audition Psych 101, which I guess we'll talk about what that is, or should I get to it now?
Go for it.
All right. So Audition Psych 101 is, you could probably talk about it better than I can. It's a class I've been teaching for 15 years all over the country that is all about the psychological side of the audition. It's an unusual class because, you know, there isn't any cold reading or anything. We're just talking about what goes on in your brain, and it's mostly conversation. And then the other class that I've been teaching a lot lately is Five and Under, which is strictly for co-star roles. Those are really hard to audition for. And as I go into in the class, in many ways, they run against what we're taught in acting class, because in acting class, you're not playing a waiter who says more coffee. You're playing Hamlet. You're playing, you know, Medea. You're doing major roles. So those are the two classes. Coming up, New York, on Wednesday, November 6th, I'm teaching Audition Psych 101 here in New York. Then I go to Atlanta. We've actually sold out the two classes that we originally scheduled, so we added two more. We're doing both Audition Psych 101 and Five and Under. That's the November 8th through 10th. Registration for that is different. You have to go to theworkingactorgroup.com. They're arranging the whole thing. And then I go to Chicago. I'm very excited to go back to Chicago. I love the actors there. On Saturday, November 23rd, in the evening, I'm doing Audition Psych 101. And then on Sunday, November 24th, from 10 to 2, I'm doing Five Lines and Under. And registration for those classes, the New York ones and the Chicago ones, are on my website, which is auditionpsych101.com.
Awesome. And I'm planning on going to the Sunday class, November 24th. So if anybody wants to come say hi to me, do it. Looking forward to it.
Scene study for Five Lines and Under. That's like, I think that's an unusual class.
Yeah, and incredibly important, especially here in Chicago, because we have so many of those auditions. I mean, that's where everybody starts, and a lot of times they book the larger roles, the recurring, and even the guest stars in LA and New York, and then it's left to the Chicago actors to do all the co-stars.
Yeah, and look, you know, I'm particularly qualified because I did a bunch of co-stars at the beginning of my career. I'm not a casting director who's going to teach it from that perspective. I'm talking about the acting process for us. So that's why I love doing it. I feel like I've been there. I've met these challenges. I know exactly that weird, you know, shot out of a cannon feeling when you've got two lines and they say go. You know, it's awful. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those are fun. We've been having a great time with those.
So during this episode, I got a number of listener questions through the Facebook group, which if you want to ask questions in the future, just go to Facebook and look up Action, the Pursuit of Acting Excellence. You'll find the group, join it. And then when I have people on, I ask if people want to ask them questions. So first two are about rejection, which is an interesting topic. And then we'll go into some totally random ones.
Good. I love this.
Kate Daly says, rejection is part of the business, and there's a lot of reasons outside of our control that you can get rejected for. So how do you tell if the rejection is based on something in your control? Even something as basic as changing your hair color or style can have a big impact on your marketability. So when does the rejection become a cue that a change needs to happen in order to make yourself more appealing to the casting directors?
Okay. I might have like a 20-minute answer to this question because there's so many good topics within this question, you know. You know, a lot of the work that I've done that has helped me manage this whole profession has to do with reframing. And I don't mean artificially reframing things and forcing your brain to do something that, you know, I don't believe in convincing yourself of something that's not true. But I've taken out a lot of these little ideas that are commonly held among actors and asked myself, does this pass the logic test? Does it stand up? So first, I just want to talk about the concept of rejection. Whenever people say to me, oh, that's a tough business, you go through a lot of rejection, the first thought that comes to mind is I don't experience it as rejection. And not because I'm some weird positive thinker or anything. It's not really what's going on. When I think about the word rejection, I always think of like an assembly line where they're putting together parts, and one that doesn't work and doesn't fit is a reject. They've got to throw that one out. A reject is such a, you know, this doesn't pass the test. It's not up to par kind of idea. But really, with acting, with auditioning, most of the people don't get picked. They can only pick one. So it's more like shopping than like rejecting. I don't see them going, oh, that person's no good. That person's no, oh, that person could never do that. That's not what the process is like from the casting side. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm really not getting rejected. What's happening is I'm not getting picked. And again, I just want to emphasize, I don't say that to myself as a pep talk. I say that to myself because that's really more logical. That's really more what's going on. If you're rejected, like something was wrong and you weren't up to par, then the next step is, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? What could I have done differently? And 99% of the time, the answer is nothing. You just didn't get picked. You know, if you're ordering from a menu and you go with the burger instead of the salad, there's nothing wrong with the salad. You just picked a burger, you know? So as actors, we're like, oh, I should have said that line differently or worn something differently or done something different with my hair. For the most part, I think it's mentally more healthy, and I think it's much more true to say, you just didn't get picked. There's no there. If it had been a different day or a different casting person or a different director or same outfit, same performance, they might have picked you. As opposed to making ourselves crazy with where did I fail? I just don't think, if every time you don't get picked for a role, you're thinking you failed, that's, oh my God, that's exhausting, since most of the time we don't get picked. Now, I would say, I guess there might be a type question, you know, you might be dressing wrong for your type or something like that. I think this is rare, or presenting yourself in a way that's wrong for your type. And I think that's a problem to solve with colleagues and friends and brainstormers and mentors in your life, not with casting people. But I will say that I don't think a hairstyle is going to knock you out of the running for a part that you're right for. I forgot to mention, I've been doing these little weekly videos. They're like 5 to 10 minutes long on all different topics related to the audition. And I've been doing them for a year. They're free. They're on my website. I encourage everybody to check them out. I always forget to mention them, and people really are enjoying them. And it's, again, my sort of gift to the acting community. But for a recent one, I decided to visit a friend of mine who's a casting director. We sat in her office with all her colleagues, and we laughed a lot, asked her a bunch of questions. And she said, you know, honestly, if you fit the mold, if you fit what the director has described for us, and you blow a line, or you're not dressed right, or you drop your, you know, script, we're still calling you back because we want to get this right and we can see that you fit. I just spoke with a friend of mine who went on an audition, and his take on the role was wrong. And the casting director said, you know, you are so right for this. I want to work with you and figure out how, you know, and he got there and he was great. But they're, you know, I like to assume that they're good at their job. I feel like I want to apologize for being so verbose, but it's such a great question. I'm still going on. Is this okay?
It's all good.
Okay, good. You know, I find it, again, mentally healthy to assume the casting directors are good at what they do, meaning they can see past an outfit, a hairstyle, or a, you know, or a mistake to do their casting. So anyway, that's my big long answer to Katie, because I think that we do ourselves a disservice and make ourselves miserable, which is something actors are very good at, by trying to figure out where we failed when you absolutely didn't fail. And there's every reason to believe that you were a great choice and they just didn't feel that you were the right choice this time around.
What would you say to the people who, okay, so for instance, I consider myself an incredibly analytical person, probably to a fault.
Okay? Oh, me too. Me too.
Right. So I tend to think that there is a right way to do, there's always a best way to do something. And if you can find that best way, then you can do that, whatever it is, the best. That's just the way I've always thought. So I agree with you that I don't see it as rejection. I don't think I ever really felt like it was rejection. I think I pretty quickly understood. I just didn't get it. They picked somebody else. I was, I was too young or too old or whatever, you know, something that was, that's out of my control. But don't you think there is something to be said for, let's say you don't get a callback. Cause if you're getting callbacks, in my opinion, I think it's just a matter of time. You're doing it. You're doing great. I mean, you're getting called back. But if you're not getting called back and it's going on for a long, long time and you're just not getting called back, don't you think that there's some, it's important to think, okay, maybe I am falling short somewhere and maybe I need to figure that out.
It's a great question. I'm very analytical too. I agree with you. I won't say that there's no exploration to be done there, but I think people look in the wrong place. They look to their interpretation of a particular role or how they're dressed. To me, there are two areas that we can always work to improve. One is our acting ability in general. Become a better actor, which we should all be doing constantly, whether it's in class or just through, you know, I do a lot of people watching. I learn a lot when I work, you know. But I have come to believe in my many years doing this, that the thing I hate right and wrong, but I think the thing that we get wrong the most is allowing so much anxiety and neediness to come with us into the room because it's so uncomfortable and nobody wants to be around that. So in essence, the trying really hard to get a job might be what's fucking you up.
Mm.
I know that sounds counterintuitive, but you know, we don't have a pass fail. We don't have a good versus bad or a right versus wrong. I always like to point out, everyone listening to this podcast can think of a performance that they went, how did that guy get cast? What the hell were they thinking? So it's not like they always make the best choice even. You know, I think if you don't get picked, the best thing you could do is think, well, I was too talented and they were intimidated. I think they were intimidated by my talent. It was too much.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? I think this is why I teach Audition Psych 101 and why it's such a passion of mine and why it's so important. Often people are bringing such a sense of neediness and sort of weird like beggar mentality, like let me know if I'm bad or, you know, am I okay? Or, you know, this vibe that people can smell on you and it's really uncomfortable to be around, that effort to get it exactly right can be exactly what's wrong. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Well said.
And also look, you know, if you go at this for years and you don't get picked, true, you might be a sucky actor. Maybe you suck. That's rarely the case because the people who want to keep doing this and it's your passion and it's what you want to do, you'll keep doing it, which probably means you're a born actor.
Right.
And listen, I'm still learning stuff. I'm still getting better. I mean, I hope I am. Every job is a new challenge for me. I am a lifelong student of what we do. And I think every good actor is, you know.
Agreed. This moves us nicely into the next listener's question.
Okay, hit me.
And I'll start off by saying that I don't think we've ever talked about this before, but I'm interested to hear your thoughts. I think that asking your agent for feedback, or if they can get feedback from a casting director, is incredibly valuable. I got a number of years ago, I did that. I did it once. I did it once and once only. I didn't think I was getting enough callbacks or something, and I wasn't booking enough work. And I said, and I heard somebody say, ask for feedback. And I had never heard that before. So I asked my agent, I said, if you ever get any feedback from the casting director, I'm all ears. And I got a really great piece of feedback, and it changed the trajectory of my career. At this time, I was in a place where I was auditioning for co-stars, and I was under the impression I knew that I needed to. This is tricky territory because the wording is difficult. I didn't want to do too much in the co-star audition, and I ended up doing too little. Okay. And the casting director told my agent, we understand what he's trying to do and we like him a lot, but he's swung too far the other way. And that is all I needed to hear that helped me so much. And I immediately started to book work. I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are about asking your agent for feedback from the casting director. Now, the listener, I don't know how to say your last name. I'm sorry. It's Vallot. David Vallot. Vallot. Okay. One of the two.
He says. Cool name either way.
Absolutely.
What does he say?
He says, what do you think about the idea of bringing some type of brief performance survey to give to casting directors with the intent of getting improvement feedback? Now, I know that people might think that that is a crazy question. And I'm right off the bat going to say, don't do that. But let's talk about that. Let's talk about feedback in general.
Here's how I know you and I have never talked about this. Because it's going to be our biggest disagreement to date.
Okay. Hey, that's good. That's
good. No, it's good. I think it's great when we have, you know, it's always a lesson that there are different experiences and we have to become the experts at shaping what worked for us. You know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Here's my pitch on why I say don't ask for feedback. I feel that casting directors have a job. That job description doesn't include teaching, validating, mentoring. I don't think they're there to teach us. I don't think it's their job. I also think that when you ask for feedback, it puts you in a certain position as somebody who needs help getting to a certain level, as opposed to letting them just remember you as somebody that they didn't pick that time around. Now, the part of what you said that I agree with is if the casting directors offer feedback to your agent, of course, good God, tell your agent to always tell you good, bad, or otherwise, because that may be very helpful. Because the casting person make the call and say, listen, you should tell your client this, this, and this. That's great. The reason I'm stumbling and hesitating is that your story is so convincing that I'm kind of like, but as a rule, I'm really against asking for feedback because you're asking them to do a job that is not their job. Now, if you're a beginner and everybody knows it, and that's totally cool, or you're new with an agency, I think there's no reason to hide that. And maybe that's a good opportunity to ask for feedback. But the questionnaire is off the charts wrong. Because, you know, when you already have a job and somebody comes in and gives you more of a job, it's never welcome. You know, and boy, talk about identifying yourself as an amateur.
Yeah.
Because you're doing something that's like, that's just not how it's done, you know? Mm-hmm. So in terms of getting better at auditioning, you know, look elsewhere, look to classes, again, look to coaches, get coaching. Coaching helps, you know? I would say, I'm just going to say, get my book, Audition Psych 101. It will help you, you know, with these kinds of things. But I would not create more work for a casting director who's probably already busy. Mm-hmm. So you and I have our first, I love that we have our first real, like, substantial disagreement about
yeah. Procedure. Podcast over, never talking to you again.
No, it's great. It's great. Cause I feel like you made such a good case for it that, you know, listeners can hear the merits in both of what we're saying. And it just reminds you again, we think in terms of right, wrong, do you do this, do you not do this? There aren't as many absolutes as we would be comfortable with. Mm-hmm. So every time we say, well, can I do this? Can I not do this? The answer is, you know, there's no answer.
Yeah. I often think about a friend of mine who auditioned for Chicago shows for something like 7 years without booking anything. Mm-hmm. And it drove him crazy. I mean, it drove him absolutely crazy, as it would, to the point where he was like on the verge of giving up, just throwing in the towel and completely giving up. And this guy was a good actor. From what I could see, he was a good actor. He was producing and directing his own things that were quality, and he was doing well. He absolutely could not understand why he was not booking shows. And he was talking to me about it for years. And at first I was like, it's just a matter of time, man. Just don't worry about it. It's going to be fine. You're just going to book it eventually. And this went on and on and on to the point where I had no ideas for him. I mean, I could no longer say, just be patient. He literally said to me, if one more person tells me to be patient, I'm going to like tear somebody's face off. I mean, he was so upset about this. In cases like that, I would say, ask for feedback. I mean, you might as well.
Yeah.
If it's a case of like a last ditch effort and you are just not booking and you're taking classes and you think you're doing everything right, maybe in that case it makes sense.
Yeah, I'm sure at that point your agent would want to get feedback anyway.
Right. Right, definitely.
Yeah, I think I really understand the case you're making for it now, and I think I'm not being generous when I say that I think there's merit to all of what we've said about it. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I think we have to keep in mind that the casting director's job is not to teach, but I think that if it's just not happening at all, and maybe there's a casting director who has seen you enough times to be able to go, hey, he's doing this thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But if they're still calling you in, I just feel like that's the vote of approval. They're saying this person can definitely book. They're right. You know, if they're still calling you in for 7 years, I don't know.
Right.
Anyway, right. Unresolved, but yes.
Okay. Next question. So this guy's got a cool name too. I'm assuming it's Italian. So Gui Fontanezzi. Or if it's Americanized, Fontanese. Okay. How does an actor do the work of building a relationship with a casting director after auditions when they are reading for under 5 roles and one-liners?
You know, I hope people will find my answer encouraging. I'm not good at this, and I don't understand much about building a relationship with a casting director. I like to just go in, do the work, and have them remember me. So I don't know how to do that. Mm. I mean, I know that some people send a follow-up postcard or a thank you, and I think that's great. I don't do it, but I don't think it's a bad practice. I just assume they're good at what they do, and they'll remember and call you back in. Or, you know, if you have an agent, then the agent is going to keep submitting you. But I don't know how to build that relationship.
Mm-hmm. I'm so with you on this. I'm such a terrible networker. I don't put an iota of
me either
of work into it. And I know that I probably should, and I see people be very successful at it. It's not my thing. My thing is I want to just be the best I can fucking be and go do that over and over and over again and let that speak for itself.
Yeah. Well, we're both guys who work, so maybe there's some merit in our approach.
Maybe so.
I don't know. I just hate that we left him hanging with no practical advice, but I just think that anything that feels like it's trying too hard, I don't know. I hate salesmanship. So I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess follow up with a thank you, you know, if you want.
I do that sometimes. I do that. I do send thank you cards for things. If a casting director books me on a job, I send a thank you card to them that says that is just authentic. And I'm honestly trying to thank them. And I say, I had a great time on set. Thank you for calling me in.
Yeah.
really appreciate it, and just leave it short and that's it, because I am thankful, you know?
Right.
You know, and then, or, you know, maybe if I see a casting director for the first time, that hasn't happened for a really long time because there's not that many here in Chicago, but maybe that would make sense to send it after the first time. Thank you so much for seeing me. I enjoyed it. Something like that. I would err on the side of when in doubt, say nothing.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
Although my casting director friend, well, I have many of them, but my friend Gail, she said, you know, she said, I hate admitting this, but I do remember the people who send gifts better. She said, it's awful. Because she used to be an actress. You know, she was a successful musical theater actress. And she said, it's terrible, but it just does it. I do remember them more. So it's awful. But, you know, so maybe there's some effect. Maybe there's some effectiveness in all that schmoozing. But I can't stand to do it. It feels phony. See, I like what you do, which is like, I'm really thankful. So I'm, you know. In fact, I should do that, and I don't do it. But I, you know, I have a philosophy, which is like, we're all doing our jobs. We're all doing our jobs. Casting is doing its job. If I'm the choice, they're lucky to have found me, and I'm lucky to have found them. And we're, you know, it's, I don't know. I don't feel like one faction thanking the other. To me, it's like, you know, the lighting guy thanking the sound guy on the set.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Anyway.
Yeah,
no. I want to get us away from this sort of desperate beggar kind of thinking, because I think it's unappealing to people, and I don't think it helps our careers in the way that we think it does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this oh, don't forget me, you know, kind of thing. I don't know.
Yeah. That's a big. I mean, I can tell by the questions that I get asked. You know, there's often a desperation element. I mean, I don't. No offense to anybody. And I totally get it because.
Oh, I get it. Because there's so many of us. There's so many of us. And especially when you're young in your career, it's like, how is anybody going to notice me in this sea of actors? And I just, you know, I always go back to this, as corny as it sounds, but I live by this. It's like, find the joy in wherever you are in your career. If you have an audition, enjoy that. If you don't have an audition and you're doing a student film, enjoy that. Enjoy the community theater. Enjoy the, whatever, wherever you're at, you know. Find the joy in what you do have access to, as opposed to fretting and freaking out and trying to crack the uncrackable code of what you don't have access to. But again, I know that people listen to that and go, well, it's easy for you because you're working, you know? And I know that's true. I know that's true. But I hate seeing us make ourselves miserable.
This episode will continue right after this. Backstage has been a leader in the entertainment industry since the 60s. Their casting department publishes more than 30,000 casting notices every year, from projects ranging from major studio productions to indie films, both union and non-union. That's more than any other platform. I've been a member for a while now. I think you should be too. To try it for free for 30 days, go to backstage.com/action. That's backstage.com/action. Now back to the episode. Well, once again, that leads into the next question.
So wait, so I'm successfully building segues to questions I haven't heard. That's pretty
exactly.
good.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's good. Wow. That's like a psychic ability.
Put that on your resume.
Okay.
Okay. Nicole Rogers Fryer says, she wants to know about weighing the costs and benefits of doing theater. She says, pros, adding to your resume, showing casting directors you stay busy and are committed, expanding network, creative outlet. Cons, conflicts with on-camera opportunities. Understudy is ideal, but not always possible, especially in Chicago. Highly, she says. There's a different pay for on-camera acting.
Could you read me that list one more time? I'd love, and hi, Nicole. Nicole and I have exchanged thoughts before. So yeah, I want to hear that. Yeah.
Okay, so for pros, she says, adding to resume, showing casting directors that you're staying busy and are committed, expanding your network. It's a creative outlet. And then for cons, she says, conflicts with on-camera opportunities. She says, understudy is not always possible. And she says that the pay is different.
Yeah. This is just another fantastic question. When you hear me pause, it's because my wheels are turning. I'm glad I asked for that list again, because she did say creative outlet, but that is a very mild way to put the thing that stands out for me that's sort of glaringly missing from the list. I think if you're an actor, getting to act is like vitamins. Whether you're, you know, I've had people gathered here in my living room to read a play and felt like, oh man, I needed that. I needed that that acting vitamin. It's also something that you don't necessarily get when you do on camera work, depending on what the job is. Sometimes it's punching the clock and getting a paycheck and getting a credit, you know. So, yeah, your list is not wrong, Nicole. It's absolutely right. I just want to add to it. I want to make sure that you don't forget the joy of being employed doing what you do. And when I say employed, I don't mean in the financial sense. I mean in the you're employed in that occupation, in that endeavor of getting to do your thing, and you feel like an actor again, you know. Any time that we base the value on the outcome, wow, I'm about to sound really profound. Anytime that we base the value on the outcome, we're taking a real gamble. We're putting ourselves in a bad position. So if we're saying, well, I'm going to take this play because it's going to give me exposure and maybe the casting directors will come to see it and maybe it'll lead to something. I used to have this manager who'd say, oh yeah, maybe the theater will lead to something. I'm like, no, it is something. I'm doing theater, doing a play, yeah. You know, like it's great to do a play. To get picked is amazing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like again and again, we leapfrog right over the part that made you want to be an actor in the first place, which is, I love acting. I get to play a role. I get to be a character. I get all of that, you know? And again, I am not dinging you, Nicole, for being career minded, because that's great too. And you need to be, you know? So that's part one of my answer, my verbose answer. Second time is, I cannot tell you how many things I've turned down for what might happen. I have had, and I look back and they're the biggest mistakes in my career. I got cast in a really wonderful play. This is the one that haunts me. I got one at South Coast Rep, which is a crazy great theater. And my manager convinced me to dump it because of possible TV work. And you know what? I got some TV work, but I missed out on a play I really loved. Hmm. And I in our career, whatever you choose to do, you're going to miss something else. You know, mm-hmm. In New York, we have, you know, Broadway tours that go out. You might be going out for a year. You're going to miss some stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. But the number of times I, for example, have turned down plays because it was pilot season and then sat around all pilot season with not a single audition. I'm telling you, there's a case to be made for A Bird in the Hand. If you'll indulge my verbosity even further, part of the answer to this has to do with where you are in your career. And I find I have to constantly recalibrate that. I am now finally in a category where it's more likely I'll get seen for a series regular. I still don't get seen for them very often still, and take that in because I work a lot, but I don't go in for a lot of series regulars. So, you know, but now my agent is like, yeah, you shouldn't take any plays during pilot season. But back then I didn't need to turn down anything. I wasn't getting seen for any pilots. So, yeah, I don't know what else to say about that. I think part of it also is, do you like the play? Mm-hmm. If you don't like it, don't do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I just turned down an audition for something kind of big because I was like, I just don't like it. Mm-hmm. That was kind of crazy, weird feeling. But at a certain point, you do get to make those decisions. Have I covered that? That's an interesting question. The question is a really good question.
Right.
We make these decisions constantly in our careers. And I feel like every time you come back to that spot, you got to make the decision again based on where you're at and what the project is. And, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. When I quit my crappy sales job, I don't know how many years ago that was, a while ago, decided that I was going to go all in on acting. I got an agent, for print modeling as well. And I wanted to get into theater and I wanted to start doing theater, but I pretty quickly started making money print modeling, and the theater that I was going to be auditioning for, I knew I wasn't going to be able to get out of it for the money that I would make print modeling. And, man, I wrestled with that. I wrestled mm-hmm. with that for years, years and years, just thinking, what do I do? Do I take the money or do I do the theater? I eventually took the money. I went with the money route, and I never, ever have done theater. I don't know if I would say I wish I had turned down the money, but I regret the fact that I didn't get to do theater.
It's not like you're 98 years old, right? Two things I want to point out about your story, which is one, the money was an actually happening thing, as opposed to what if I get offered blank, you know?
Right.
Like in this sort of abstract sense. So you measured something actual. Again, you took the actual thing over the non-actual thing, which is sort of what I'm talking about.
True.
But I also, I am really, really working on this with myself, giving myself the right, every time I come up against this decision, to make it differently. Like sometimes I just am really jonesing to do some theater. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take myself out of the market. I just booked a play. It's out of town and it goes partially into pilot season. So my agent and I talked about that, you know? And she said, look, a lot of these pilot auditions, you can put yourself on tape. And I said, yeah. And honestly, I don't go in for a lot of pilots. And she said, take the bird in the hand. You know, you'll be happier. And I'm like, you know, there's something to be said for that too. So I am taking a play that's going to have me out of town during part of pilot season, you know, but I'm going to have a great time, even though it's in Cleveland, a city I hate, but that's even still, I'm going to have a great time, you know? And I think the great time part is also like, we don't get enough opportunities to act. So there's something to be said for that. But you at this point could say, you know what? I'm going to really focus on doing the artistically fulfilling theater, even if it pays crap. And I go back and forth with this. You know, sometimes I'm like, I feel like my TV career supports my theater career. And, you know, we just keep needing to make these decisions. But all I'm saying is, as we do, the artistic fulfillment, joy part should be part of the decision.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And some people really get a lot more of that from doing TV work, and they're not that into theater. So for them, it makes sense to go, you know what, I'm going to just not do any plays and see what TV I can get. But again, we're talking about theoretical, possible, maybe work that's someplace out in the ether. That it's not like it's two things you're actually getting offered.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I have a couple questions that I want to ask. Just from my own brain. And these are, this is what I love doing, and there's no segue whatsoever at all.
I love it.
Specific to auditions, specific to acting. All right, so Ron Marasco, who was on the first number of episodes, gave me a lot of incredible advice. One question I asked him many years ago was, when you are in an audition where you're talking to multiple characters, and there's obviously only going to be one reader, do you use the reader as one character and then place another character somewhere else in the room, or do you always use the reader as the different characters? Now, I've just wondered about this, and I know what you're thinking right now, Michael. What you're thinking is there's no right answer. I'm curious to hear what you think. What I generally think is I think it makes more sense to me and makes me better at auditioning if I can place another person in the room, if it makes sense. Maybe on the other side of the camera, where I'm able to glance over and just show that I'm, not show, but just differentiate with who I'm talking to. What do you think?
I'm ready. First of all, I in my video series, you know, these little videos I was talking about, I did one called Where to Look. So, you know, I'll just put this out there for those people who might want to hear more on this. I'm actually not going to say there's no right answer. I'm going to say that the right answer varies.
Okay.
So, I'll tell you where it lands for me. To me, it really depends on if the relationship I have with the two people is different enough that it's really going to help me to look from one to the other. Like if there's the guy that I hate on one side and the guy that I'm friends with on the other side, that's when it really helps. What I don't think we have to do is show the casting director that we're talking to somebody different, because they already know that.
Right.
If we were doing it for for the public who hasn't seen the story, they would need that help. But the casting director doesn't need that help. So I think you do it when it's helpful to you. Helpful to you in your acting. Not because the scene requires it, or you're trying to get it right, or you're helping the casting director understand you're talking to somebody different. So I prefer to connect with the reader as much as I can. Because it's weird for me to talk to the air. For you, you like having that differentiation more than I do, which is great. But I'm going to teach you a little trick.
Okay.
When I'm going from one character to the other, so I'm talking to, you know, my wife and a detective, right? So I'm playing the scene with the reader, and the reader is reading my wife. Someplace in the last line of the wife, I find a reason to look away. And when I look back, I'm looking at the detective, you know? Or I'll just look up for a thought, deliver a line out someplace else. I'm demonstrating it, but your readers can't hear it, which is fine. And then when I look back, it's the detective for me. And I can do that all throughout the scene. But I generally stay with the reader regardless, but there are absolutely times that I will put the other person on the other side because it helps me play the scene.
Mm-hmm.
How's that? That's not too, I didn't say there's no right answer.
You know? Yeah.
You know, I think again, what I always want to pry away from these questions is, how do I get it right? How do I not fuck up? I don't want to offend them. I don't want them to see, look at me and think, oh, he did it wrong. That's the shit you got to throw the fuck out. You got to throw that out.
Yeah.
You have to throw that out and get back to, okay, I'm an artist. How do I want to play the scene?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's not a wrong and right and wrong in terms of that, in terms of somebody looking at you and going, oh, you looked at the other side of the camera. That's terrible.
Right. Got it.
Do you buy that?
Totally.
Answer?
Totally. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. That's generally how I think about it. I think about it like if it helps me, because generally I don't like using the reader if there's distinct characters.
Yes.
It just doesn't, I don't feel like I can do that as well as, and so therefore I don't.
Well, then you're absolutely doing the right thing because you're doing what makes your work feel more right to you. And that's always the right answer.
Yeah. Another question, the kind of along the similar lines, and Ron gave me advice on this as well. I usually tell people when it comes to TV, don't improv, don't add words, don't add lines and stuff. Don't mix it up. Do you think it's ever appropriate to do that? Maybe to add a button on the end, a word on the end, or something? Or do you generally stick to the script exactly?
Yes, this will be a shorter answer. I think it's not a big deal. First of all, in commercials, they seem to like when you add a button.
Yeah.
It's the difference between rewriting and ad-libbing. Some people say, oh, I think this line would be better this way. That now you're being a writer. Don't do that.
Yeah.
I don't get obsessed with getting the words exactly right because nobody cares. I really don't. I mean, if I memorize, but if I get a word wrong, it's nobody cares. Nobody cares. It's not a big deal at all. But yes, I will sometimes add a word or two at the end if I feel it, you know, because it doesn't bother anybody. But I'm just going to circle back and repeat. I want to honor the writer's work by not, you know, coming up with a whole different speech or, you know, completely different line because I think it's better.
Mm-hmm.
That never goes well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Totally agree.
I think we usually agree.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Let's do one more for me, and then I got two more listener questions.
Okay.
What do you think about asking about details of a script prior to the audition starting?
This one's easy. You only ask questions that are going to have an impact on what you're about to do.
Okay. And you think that that's okay? That makes sense to do that.
Well, you know, people, again, this is a thing people get really hung up about. Like, you know, when they say, do you have any questions on the material? I've often had people say, well, what if I have no questions? Well, that's badass. I almost always have no questions,
mm-hmm.
You know? So if I don't have any questions, I don't have to come up with one. Mm-hmm. But if I really go, yeah, this one thing didn't make sense to me, mm-hmm. you know, in the scene. And it's going to actually have an effect on how I play it. If it's going to have an effect on how I play it, mm-hmm. Like what does the character know and what does he not know?
You know?
But if it's something about a scene that's coming later in the script, like do they end up getting married? We don't care because right now we don't know in that story.
Yeah.
You know?
Got it.
So I think anything that legitimately has a bearing on what you're about to do in the audition.
Yeah.
Which I think is rare.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm in a situation like that. I usually don't ask questions. I'm in a situation like that with this audition. And so that came up because it will have a dramatic impact on how, because I need to know who this one character is. And I have tried to do the research. The show is not out yet. I've tried to do the research.
But it's a great question.
I can't figure it out. Yeah.
That's a great question.
And it has a huge impact on the way that this character would react to that other character.
Not only is it a great question, but you could also ask your agent to ask that question in advance. As you prepare.
Mm.
Say, yeah. You know, we had a question. It shows you're a smart thinking actor. I mean, again, don't use this as a technique to schmooze casting directors, but you have a legit question.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You don't have to wait till you get in the room and punt. You can find out in advance.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay, I'm going to sneak one more. I got one more.
Good.
One more question. And I think this is pertinent to everybody who's listening. When it comes to, so we all get character descriptions, breakdown of the character, and generally there'll be a physical description. The way I feel about it is, let's say if the character is wearing a suit in the description, I generally think if it's really convenient for me to wear a suit, like if I'm not going anywhere straight from there, I'll put a suit on. If it's not convenient for me, I'll maybe bring a sport coat with me and suggest it, right? I don't generally suggest that people go very far out of their way to look like the character. Now, I am in a position where I am going to an audition later where I have facial hair and I generally wear facial hair. I don't mind being clean shaven, but I generally wear facial hair. This character would not have facial hair. If I booked this role, they would shave my face. I know that. I would rather not shave, but my question is, how do you think about that? How do you think about looking like the character?
I don't drive myself crazy about it. I always think what's helpful to the casting person. And I think suggesting the outfit is helpful. You know, the difference between a suit and a sport coat is zero.
Yeah.
You know, it's zero. You know, sometimes I don't feel like wearing dress shoes because I'm, you know, tromping around New York. So I got sneakers. It truly doesn't make a difference. And there have been times that I'm like, oh crap, this just came in. I don't have time, or I forgot to wear such as, you know, it's fine. It's fine. It's, you know, again, I think casting directors are good at their jobs. If we can help them, we should help them, you know. I'm usually clean shaven and I'll stay unshaven if that helps, you know, but mm-hmm. but I don't think you have to shave for an audition. Mm-hmm. Because again, I think they can see past that. Mm-hmm. I also believe, okay, so what if that throws them off a little bit and they're less likely to cast you? You know what I'm going to say? They weren't going to anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's not going to make the difference.
It's not going to make the difference. It's really not going to make the difference. Listen, so I usually don't talk about auditions, but since I booked the play, I'll tell you that it's Clue. I had a great time dressing in the color of the character. It's not why they cast me. I did it because it was fun. You know, yeah. I went in for Professor Plum and I put together like a purple outfit. They did not say, oh, let's cast that guy because he has purple clothes. I just did it for fun, you know, just right. for my enjoyment. And also that's the other thing is I feel like when I put on a suit, I feel more like a lawyer than if I go in t-shirt and jeans. So those two things help. But again, get away from the make or break thinking.
Yeah. Right. Cool. Okay. Neil Green wants to know your thoughts on starting an acting career in your 40s. And a lot of people liked that comment. So I think a lot of people are interested in what your thoughts are.
I think the answer is, do you want to? And here's why I say that. That may sound overly simple. You know, you're going into it knowing that most people don't make a living at this, and most people don't, you know, become overnight sensations, and, you know, and starting late is, you have less, maybe less of a chance. Maybe, we don't know. There are no rules in this stuff. And if you want to do it anyway, good God, you absolutely should. And again, you know, take pleasure in anything you get to do, whether it's an acting class or a booking or a, you know, or hanging out with fellow actors. To me, the question is, do you want to be in the life? Do you want to be in this life, which includes working and not working, and, you know, and the mystery of it all, and the chaos of it all? I love it. I mean, I love being an actor, whether I'm employed or not. I fucking love it. I love our tribe. I love the stuff that I get to think about and work on. I love, you know, coaching, teaching, and breaking stuff down for an audition. So if all that's your jam, then there's no reason not to do it. I think I'm going to connect this to an answer that I gave to another question, which is, if it's contingent on outcome, take a careful look at that.
Yeah.
Because that part is so unpredictable. It might go great. You might never work. It runs the whole gamut. And if all that makes you go, yeah, I want to do it anyway, oh, please start a career at 40. Of course you should. There are several famous, successful actors who started late. Charles Durning comes to mind. I believe he started his career at 50. You know, I didn't seriously start working. I mean, I was always an actor, but I didn't really start working till I was in my late 30s. So I'm encouraging of this, because it sounds like it's something that's going to bring you joy in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Just make sure that the value of it isn't connected to the outcome.
And I will say that when I started, I was 26, and I felt like that was late. And other people have suggested that to me as well. They'll say, well, you started at 26. What did you think about starting late? And I was somewhat insecure about that when I first started, and I wished that I had started earlier. But I gave this advice in an earlier podcast. Number one, I very well could have screwed myself if I had started when I was 18. You don't have the life experience. You don't have the maturity and so forth. So there's that. But also, if you start later on in your life, you have a lot more experience. You've just experienced more things, and you can relate to more circumstances in performances or auditions, because you just lived longer. You've lived more life, you know, yeah. And you do that. That is an asset.
And there may be some wonderful surprises ahead. You may discover you're so great at this. I just met with, I love mentoring. So anytime somebody says, can we go out to coffee? I always do. I just met with a guy who's been doing this 2 years and has pretty much been working constantly, not at high paying gigs, but, you know, theater here and regional theater. And, you know, I mean, that's very unusual. Mm-hmm. So you never know. You know, the unpredictability of this business can absolutely be as positive as it is negative, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I used to write the advice column for Backstage, and I once got a letter from somebody asking this question, and she was really coming to it from a sales background, and she was trying to really gauge, you know, the algorithms and the, you know, demographics, and, you know, sort of have a plan. I don't even know if those are the right words, but really kind of assess before she takes the risk what the chances are. And that is really the wrong way to go into this business, because nobody knows. Nobody can tell you, you know, well, following this chart, you can see that starting at 40, you have this much chance, depending on this, your gender, and your, it just doesn't line up like that.
Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't.
Mm-hmm. The last listener question comes from Tim Ashby, and he says, I don't know if it's in his book. I just ordered it. But how do you not psych yourself out when the audition is for a director that is, quote, a big deal? I find I avoid doing the work I know I need to do when I get an audition for something that's, quote, important.
This is sort of, yes, it's absolutely in the book, because my book is about this, you know, the psychological side of the audition, and that's what all this stuff is about not psyching yourself out. I'm pausing because this may sound strange out of context. If you take the class or read the book, it makes a lot more sense. But here's the thing. I approach, my God, this is going to sound weird, but it's true. I approach every audition with the presumption that I'm not going to get the job. I'm not trying to get the job. What has really helped me so much, this simple, simple adjustment has helped me so much. You know, if my character is a minister, I'm going into that room because I've got to get through to people and tell them, you know, about heaven and hell. It's so much more important than an audition, you know? If I'm a dentist, I've got to explain to my patient, look, if you don't floss, you're going to have these problems. And I really take on the character's task instead of trying to impress a director, do well, be liked, book a job. I have thrown out the whole idea of the job, which has freed me up to do much better acting because, you know, I went into my Clue audition thinking, my God, there's been a murder and it's one of us. I've got to figure that out. I don't want to get killed. You know, that was became much more important than whether or not the director liked my performance. Hmm. I think that's a core principle in my class. And the other one that is also very counterintuitive to actors is that I go to an audition to see if I can be of help to the person in the room who has much higher stakes than I do. For me, it's just one job. To them, they've got to get the whole cast together. They've got to get the producer's approval and they've got writers to deal with. They've got a lot of pressure. So I don't want to add to that pressure, but with my need for a job, I want to go in there and say, okay, look, don't worry about me. I do this. This is what I do. I don't say that out loud, but this is my approach. So here's this famous director, a lot riding on this because he's famous, you know, stakes are high. So I need to help him by being relaxed, available, not needy, and see if I can help him with his puzzle. Mm-hmm. And those are like two of the sort of the pillars of my teaching. And they're, again, very different from how most actors think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The longer I do this, the more I know that those are true and the more those help. And I remind myself of those things constantly.
Yeah.
So before we end, I want to give you one more chance to talk about to say when the dates and the locations of your upcoming classes are.
Great, great. And I want to say, you know, I make my living as an actor. I don't teach for income. You know what I mean? I teach because it's humbling for me to be able to be helpful to my fellow actors. I love my tribe. I'm very open about the fact that I'm estranged from my family. They were not great people. And my family is actors. So being able to do these classes and have people go, wow, that really relieved me of some of my stress is like, I just feel like it's just such a blessing. And for that reason, my Audition Psych 101 class always has an available discount to actors who are struggling financially. And that is a pay what you can on the honor system. I don't need your money. I want you to come. So that applies to all of these classes. I can't do it with the 5 and under because it's a limited attendance, but mm-hmm. But we do have an audit price where you can just sit and watch 5 and under, which is almost as good as participating, I think, because there's a lot to watch. Okay, so that's my little pitch about that. But please take me up on it. If you're broke, I really want you to go to the registration page, find the discount link, and just pay what you can, and I'll be happy to have you there. Okay, dates. New York, Wednesday, November 6th, from 6:30 to 10:30. That's at Shetler Studios. Atlanta is the 8th through the 10th. And the reason I'm not giving you specific times is I don't know. They've loaded me up with classes that weekend, and I don't know which ones are open. But go to theworkingactorgroup.com to find out about that. And then Chicago, November 23rd and November 24th. On the 23rd in the evening is Audition Psych 101. On the 24th in the morning is 5 Lines and Under. Oh, I want to say one other thing about that, by the way, Chicago. I know the class is a long way out, but they tend to fill up fast. I will always give you a refund if you need to cancel up until the day before, because I know our schedules change constantly. So if you think you want to come, you know, book your spot, and I'm totally fine with doing that. It doesn't throw me at all because my schedule changes. I've had to cancel classes I've scheduled to teach. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those are those dates. And I really want to thank your listeners for the questions. I love doing this podcast. You have a very engaged, smart group of actors out there that really love your podcast and swear by it. And I love that they had such smart questions for me.
Yeah, and they love you. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna surprise you with one more because you like.
Oh, to, good. You like good.
To,
I love it.
Yeah, you like to be surprised with.
I'm ready
with questions. Okay, so you are pretty much always working. I mean, you have times where you're not, but I know that you've been working recently. I don't know if you can talk about it, but you finished a pretty big show recently.
Yes.
You mentioned earlier that you're a lifelong learner of the craft of acting. What have you learned? Can you think of a specific thing that you learned that you picked up since I talked to you last, which was maybe 6 or 8 months ago? It was right before you started doing, you had just booked that show.
Hmm. That's a really good one. You stumped me with that question. I have to think for a minute because I'll tell you the reflection rather than the lesson that this job gave me. So this job, and yes, I can talk about it. So I just finished filming an HBO 6-part miniseries called The Plot Against America. And it's great to be working. B, it pays well, right? But this one was also artistically fulfilling and socially relevant. And I've really been thinking about the fact that those things rarely come in the same package. We know that sometimes if we're doing a commercial or we're playing a hospital orderly or, you know, or a, you know, some tiny part, that it's not always, it feels like, this is not satisfying. It's not giving me what I want as an actor. That's okay for that to be the career building side or the, you know, the credit building side of your career. And then get some friends over to your apartment and read a play, you know, and get your jollies there. I was so stunned by how it felt to have it all in one package. I will say this, you know, we'll keep it just between us and your listeners. I've played so many lawyers at this point that sometimes when I go on Law and Order SVU or, you know, or Billions and I play a sleazy lawyer, it feels a little bit like punching the clock. I know I can do it and I love the work and I love being employed and all that's great. And it's fun. It's all those great things. But does it make me feel like, oh, I'm really doing something? Not the way that this one did. You know, so I think the revelation for me, the lesson for me is that it's okay for this to be a little bit compartmentalized. You know, if you're getting your acting vitamins from acting class and paying your bills by selling, you know, toothpaste, It's okay. It's just sort of part of the nature of this thing.
This episode has been brought to you by Backstage. Get access to more performing arts jobs than any other platform by going to backstage.com/action to get 30 days for free. I'm Lee Foster. Thanks for listening.